I'm James Wilson. I'm responsible for the research for the IFLR Awards, and I'm here with my colleague Lizzie Meager.
Hi, I'm Lizzie, Managing Editor of IFLR and Practice Insight.
So we are in an exceptional environment with COVID-19, and among other things, it's meant that we can't host our awards event this year. The big theme from the IFLR Awards globally is innovation. And we thought we'd take a leaf out of that book and innovate ourselves to try to create something a little more personal than a written winner's announcement on a website. And we hope it gives an opportunity to hear a little bit more from us personally and a little bit about some of our impressions from the research. Lizzie and I are going to look at some of the highlights from this year's awards. And in that process, we'll reveal the winners. We will only look at the Deal of the Year categories. As a suggestion, it might be an idea to listen to this while scrolling through the winners on the web page. If you leave the page, however, the audio will stop. So if you click on a link, be sure to open them in a new tab. The shortlist and winners cap off months of research for us, and in some cases, years of work for the lawyers involved in the deals. All the decisions about the shortlist and which deals and firms and teams make the shortlist are made internally by our research team, and they are made also in discussion with an internal panel made up of IFLR journalists. Lizzie, is there anything to add at all?
Yeah, I think we should just point out that this isn't a thorough explanation of why we chose certain deals for the shortlist or the winners. It's intended more as an informal look at some of the themes that have emerged, which James will sort of go into a bit more detail on. Sort of the work that really stood out to us, maybe that didn't even make it onto the shortlist. And we just want to be clear that our research process was this year as thorough as it always is, and you can find out more about that on the website. This is, of course, our first attempt at an awards podcast or a podcast at all, so please be kind to us. But over the next few weeks, we will also be inviting law firms to take part in a series where we'll be going into a bit more detail about the work. And I do just want to say, we know these times are obviously really tough for everyone, and we really hope everyone is keeping safe and healthy at home. We want to reiterate that we believe that legal innovation and creative thinking are crucial in this kind of environment in particular. These skills will help businesses weather this storm, survive and thrive. And we really hope that they will give the market hope that the tools are there to help companies come back out of this fighting. So, James, before we go into the 9 deal categories, are there any big sort of overarching themes that emerged for you from the research?
It's very hard to tease out overarching themes across so many deal categories. But if we maybe try and pick out a few, one of them would be private equity. This isn't new for us. We've seen this before. But private equity, often operating in consortium arrangements, is prevalent in quite a number of the categories here, and it's responsible for some of the biggest and most complicated deals in the awards. Perhaps another theme is that there are a lot of very big restructurings that were completed in 2019, some of which had been running for years. A third is that we are used to seeing international deals structured under English or New York law, but here there were some very interesting transactions using predominantly French law or Irish law or German law structures. And that was something particularly interesting. And perhaps a final theme is ESG, environmental, social and governance. This appears across the capital markets categories and in various guises. So Lizzie, do any of these chime with what IFLR has been covering over the past year?
I think your point about English and New York law, I think that's interesting. Do you think that that's tied to Brexit?
It's really hard to tell, and I'm probably not best placed to give a good answer on that. I think there's obviously an attempt to link it to that, to Brexit. But from the conversations I've had, I don't see a huge amount of evidence for that yet.
Well, obviously, Brexit is a theme on IFLR. Private equity, as you've talked about, it feels like we've just, you know, we've kind of been having this similar kind of conversation about private equity, so much dry powder for 5 years at least, I think. And that doesn't seem to have changed too much. One thing that has changed in the past year or so, especially, is ESG, as you rightly pointed out. We've been covering this a lot more over the past 12 months. Green bonds and sustainable project financings, wind farms, etc., have always been really, I think, well represented in the IFLR awards. But across the board, we're now seeing a lot more innovation, including loans, equity, and obviously it comes up more and more in conversations about M&A every day. And obviously, another huge theme for us, and we cover a lot of financial regulation, has been LIBOR reform. And I think what's really interesting is that the sort of deals submitted to the awards is a fairly accurate representation of what that sort of what those conversations look like with the market. We see a lot of activity in debt markets, not so much elsewhere. So while regulators are getting frustrated with the slow progress of loans, for example, debt markets are not so far behind, and that trend is really reflected in the shortlist. So I guess that's a good time to go straight into debt and equity. Do you want to kick off there, James?
Yeah, sure. So we have 8 deals on the shortlist. It's quite a crowded field, and there were quite a number of deals that just missed out as well. To name one of them, there was an offering by UniCredit Leasing Corporation, which was the first English law-governed Eurobond issued by a Romanian non-bank financial institution. This sounds very particular, but it involved a lot of quite novel and challenging legal work across various jurisdictions, especially Italy and Romania. Some of the deals here reflect that in innovation in green and social issues that we're talking about, the ESG theme. The UN Sustainable Development Goal linked bond by Italian energy company Enel was especially interesting in this respect. Although there is a debate out in the market about whether it strengthens the ESG cause or confuses it, whether it muddies the water a little bit. And then there are some sort of outlier deals here as well. For example, the Brebemi project bond doesn't reflect any of these big themes, but it's a very interesting deal with a lot of novel legal issues in there.
And who was the winner?
Well, so for our first big reveal, the winner this year is the ABP LIBOR to SONIA flip. So it's a deal that reflects that huge effort to move off LIBOR. And this really set the standard in terms of structure and conventions for migrating legacy bonds that don't follow the SONIA rates. And it sets lots of important precedents. For example, the treatment of consent fees, which here were waived. The market has since followed that model. And the consent solicitation process is now reasonably established for these.
So moving over to equity, we have 8 deals here again. It will be no secret to anyone, obviously, that equity markets have suffered over the past few years. I think that trend has been going on probably for about 20 years, but particularly in the more recent past, as regulation is obviously ramped up hugely in this area, particularly in the UK, making going public less attractive, obviously, in general. And of course, that huge theme that we've already talked about, private equity just continuing to wield their power. So what did you have on the shortlist here?
So I think during the research, a general impression we got is that equity markets in 2019 were maybe a little bit tricky. But, you know, that can sometimes make transactions even more interesting than they would normally have been. But if we look at the list, the Verallia IPO, for instance, jumps out. It has a really interesting ESG approach. We haven't seen this before, particularly in the equity category. And it's also the first European IPO under the new prospectus rules. The very big blockbuster deal on this list is the Traton IPO. This has really all the bells and whistles. It's an enormous transaction. I think anecdotally, one of the partners on the deal told me that there was an auditorium full of advisors present in Munich to kick off the transaction. 4 banks, 2 law firms advising new issuer. And it's an interesting piece of work. There are lots of pressures on the car and truck industry. There's environmental pressures, antitrust issues. This deal had listing requirements in Germany and Sweden, listed subsidiaries, squeeze out, government stakes, family owners, just a bit of everything, really. And then there's another interesting one here is DWF's IPO, which is a real one-off. It's the first premium listing of an international law firm and everything that implies, the sort of corporatization of law practices, of law firms. But in the end, and this is our second big reveal, the winner is the Huatai Securities IPO. This is a very innovative deal. The framework allowing this transaction has been in the making for quite a few years. And, you know, it can't be a Chinese structure. It can't be a European or a London structure. It has to be its own thing, a complete hybrid. And it's a hopeful deal as well for the equity, for the public markets. It establishes a new forum for public listings.
And what about high yield? It looks like private equity was another huge theme here.
Yes. Okay. Private equity was very present in the high yield category, as it always is. There are some very big deals, again, here in the shortlist. And illustrative of this is that in the research, again, senior partners told us on at least three of these transactions that they thought they were some of the most complicated deals of their careers, or the most complicated deal of my career.
That often tells you something.
Yes, and it's satisfying as well to recognize that work. You know, this is the likes of the Kantar transaction or Merlin Entertainments or the Saska deal. But away from those, there were also some really interesting bits of innovation. One deal worth pointing out is the Pinewood Studios transaction, which is an issuer that converted almost overnight from a full-service film production company into a turnkey real estate company. A very commercially successful deal from a corporate finance perspective. A nifty piece of work. And then there's some technically important deals, like House of HR, for example, in resolving how to handle IFRS 16 leases. But here for the third big reveal, the winner is the high yield piece and the financing of Bain's acquisition of Kantar. And this is, again, one of these huge deals with a lot of innovative aspects, a lot of people involved. Interesting work in terms of enforcement, deferred completion dates in the M&A transaction that had to fit with a different plan for each jurisdiction, and a lot of analysis on sort of sell down protocols, which is topical at the moment.
And you can read more about Kantar's financing and obviously all of the winning and shortlisted deals on the website. Okay, and how about loans? Just to repeat myself a bit here, private equity once again.
Yes, private equity is behind a lot of the deals here again. And once again, this isn't a new theme, but there are a lot of hybrid financings here, loans mixed in with bonds. But the loan pieces are innovative in their own rights. And to give an example, we've got quite a few loan pieces here that, you know, were fully syndicated into the US and Europe, you know, a few years ago, that we just didn't see stuff like this very often at all. And we have here US financings that have to adhere to UK certain fund requirements. These are tricky legal issues to deal with. We also in the shortlist have examples of non-bank financings, and we've seen sort of innovation in more perhaps technical areas, for example, the use of delayed draw mechanisms. We haven't seen that before. The use of unsecured subsidiaries, which again, we haven't before seen at this level. But again, here, the winner for the loan deal of the year this year is the financing of Merlin Entertainment's transaction.
2019 was obviously a hugely strong year for M&A. We may struggle a little bit with this next year, given the way this year has started. But for last year, what were the highlights of the shortlist for you?
So the M&A category is very reflective of the big themes, especially sort of pharma and biotech, which generated, I think, three of the shortlisted deals. And then there are other themes. So battery manufacturing in the car industry is very topical in Europe. There's a lot of effort to get behind it. And here we have the Northvolt transaction. And again, that's a very interesting deal because there's a mix of sort of a traditional car industry approach with a tech startup mindset and a sort of biotech development type approach in trying to bring the deal together. And then there are two bank M&A transactions as well on the shortlist and an aviation industry transaction. And there are quite a few deals that just missed out as well. A few spring to mind are the merger between FIS and Worldpay, or Vodafone's acquisition of Liberty Global's Central and Eastern European businesses, or the acquisition by CMA CGM of Sava. These are all big, complicated cross-border transactions. And it's very difficult across such a variety of work to choose a winner. I'm sure, Liz, you found that when we're talking about this.
Yeah, and I think M&A is possibly where this is most stark, because the deals you've got to pick from are so broad. Obviously, the sort of the sector that the deal is in is not relevant to us, but it does feel a bit strange when you're comparing sort of life sciences with an airline deal with a telecoms deal. It's interesting. But I suppose this is a good time to sort of reinforce the point that we are always trying to make clear to everyone, that our focus is on the legal innovation of all deals that are submitted to us. But James, who's the winner?
So the winner this year is the Galapagos-Gilead collaboration. There's a lot of reasons. I mean, it's a very bespoke deal, sort of acquisition without being an acquisition. And it reflects something that we've seen, really, one thing that came to the fore this year is that these collaborations in the pharma biotech sector are really very bespoke, and they make straightforward M&A look easy. They require a completely tailored set of documents, and there's no precedent for each of these transactions.
And, I mean, we've talked about them a lot already, but what about the private equity category?
So, yes, private equity. I think the private equity category here, I think it reinforces the what private equity brings and the role that it has in M&A. Its ability to take private, very big, complicated targets and to operate cross-border at a very high value. One of the transactions that shows this a lot is EQT's acquisition of Galderma, which I think one lawyer described to me as due diligencing to death. Like it's bringing out all the guns and being able to prevail in very competitive auctions. But that won't be news to anyone in particular. But the winner this year in this category is the Inmarsat Take Private, which is interesting on a lot of levels, but among other things, with the environment for foreign acquisitions of targets in sensitive industries, this is an interesting example of that.
And project finance, ESG looks to be a really heavy theme here.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, amazingly, five of the deals in this shortlist are wind farm financings. And it's not unexpected that there's innovation in renewables. This is a maturing area. It's scaling up. And it's also positive that there's innovation in this sector. But it's a very consistent theme across Europe. And the deals here really show the variety of financing structures and techniques that are being developed to back wind projects. But the East Anglia One project financing jumps out as one of those particularly complex one in its treatment of project risk and hedging. What was less expected, though, I think, was innovation in public-private partnership projects. And that makes up the last three of the shortlisted deals. And then to come to the winner as well. So the winner this year is the City of Belgrade Waste Energy Project. This is a PPP project, and it's a very bespoke Pathfinder project backed by Development Max.
Okay, and restructuring. It's perhaps a little bit grim to point this out, but I'd imagine that this work will be particularly useful over the next year or two.
Yes, given what we're going through, I think that the expertise in this area will be probably in quite high demand come the end of the year and next year. The 2019 had some very big restructurings complete, And there are also quite a few restructurings that didn't make the shortlist, but were nevertheless very interesting. For example, the restructuring of Belgian metals business Nyrstar, which saw Trafigura become the majority shareholder after the scheme. But in the shortlist, we have Lebara, which broke new grounds in the Netherlands and in the Nordic markets. It had a lot of Nordic pension funds and Nordic small investors involved. We have first of their kind restructurings in Turkey, in Germany, and in Ireland. Ballantine was a very complicated case involving the life insurance reinsurance market, technically demanding restructuring. Galapagos jumped all over Europe, it seems, and really tested this concept of forum shopping. And then we come to the Steinhoff Group and Agricor. These are absolutely vast restructurings. Both go back to about 2017, 2018. And the numbers are mind-boggling. I think in Agricor there were 8,000 people at the creditors' meeting. Steinhoff Group had two companies, Austrian companies, with Comey shifted to England. There are 130,000 employees. These are enormous transactions. And to come to our big reveal, number eight, the winner this year is the Agricor restructuring.
And I should just add here that we do have a really detailed analysis of the Agricor deal on iflr.com. It was written by the lawyers who worked on it not long after it closed. And it's a really great read. There's one line that's really stuck with me for quite a while now, that the fact that the court had to relocate to a basketball stadium because the creditor group was so enormous. I think that's great. And I think, you know, that story around the transaction is really interesting. So check it out. Structured finance, it was obviously a big year for securitization with the EU's simple, transparent and standardized framework. That's part of the Capital Market Union finally coming into effect. Did you see that coming up in the shortlist?
Yes, a little bit in the shortlist. It came up a lot in the awards, and there are a lot of transactions that were nominated that were the first in their jurisdiction structured under this framework. And I think there is at least one transaction on the shortlist that is a first under this framework as well. What we saw a lot of, and this has been a theme actually for a few years, is workouts of non-performing loans and securitizations in that context. And there's been a lot of very innovative work in countries like Spain and Italy, and of course Greece, which has had to work very hard to find creative avenues to work through the non-performing loan portfolios. One of the transactions that really shows this is the Piraeus Bank Intrum deal. But we also have Eurobank Agesias, another very innovative Greek deal, and out of Spain, the Prosil acquisition. There are a lot of deals relating to RMBS market. That's also spurred a lot of innovation. And then trade receivables as well has been a smaller theme, but it's been consistent, and we saw that last year as well. One deal that stands a little bit apart from these themes is the Société Générale Marina transaction, which shouldn't be missed. It's a good one. It breaks new ground, really, in ESG, if we're looking at that theme. And it's also entirely done under a French law structure, which is interesting for a big international transaction.
But who is our final deal of the year winner?
So the winner this year is the Sten trade receivable securitization. It's a very global deal, very innovative, very complicated, lots of moving parts.
Okay, well, a huge congratulations to all of our winners. That just about wraps up our first ever podcast. So we really hope you enjoyed listening to just some of the things that we talk about during the research process. Just to reiterate again, this isn't a detailed explanation of why we pick deals. We just wanted to convey some of our thoughts.
Yeah, and we'll be doing this again for the IFL IEPAC Awards and the Americas Awards. We are also inviting firms to take part in podcasts where we can look more closely at some of the work behind these deals and talk to the lawyers and teams behind the work. So please do get in touch with us if you're interested, and also look out for further announcements.
Congratulations again to all the winners, and keep safe. We look forward to seeing you again.